Welcome everyone to the NYC Dam Meetup. This is our seventh year, I believe, actually eighth. And according to this, it was 65th meetup. Yeah.
Glad you're counting.
Today's topic is going to be on dam AI and automation. Today we've assembled a nice panel discussion with some very interesting speakers that will give you some insights on all those. Whether you're familiar with them or not. And the reason why we've picked this panel is we have a practitioner, we have someone from AI, and we have someone from the human side of keywording services that all have experience in these things. So we're going to give us some insight. So first we're going to start with some intros. We'll start with left right, please.
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Kristen Shevis. I'm the Chief Customer Officer at Clarify. Clarify is an artificial intelligence company that specializes in visual recognition. So we're a platform that's built on the state-of-the-art machine learning, accessible via an API for both developers and for businesses. So we power some DAM applications like Extensis, and Matthew is here in the audience today, and Asset Bank. We also power applications like social marketing platforms like Stackla and Olapic, as well as work directly with customers like OpenTable and West Elm, for example. We're headquartered here in New York, founded in 2013. We've received $40 million in funding. So we were just written up in Forbes. We kind of compete with the big guys, Google, Amazon, Microsoft. So I'm looking forward to the discussion today.
Hello, my name is Bria Tremblay. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I work in content strategy at Viacom. I first got involved with machine learning components when I was brought on to build a streaming platform, and which never happened. But we all realized very quickly that the really cool features that we were brainstorming needed a much bigger boat to power them. So that was when we first got involved with various metadata enrichment processes, some using machine learning, some using automation, and a lot of workflows involving a variety of components, including human subject matter experts. So really excited to talk about this stuff.
Well, last but not least, my name is Mark Milstein. I'm the managing director of Microsoft Solutions. We're a Sioux Falls, South Dakota-based corporation with offices globally. We are the human side of asset management, and that is easily distilled down to we are the first sets of eyes and brain cells on a large portion of the stock content that goes on to fill the libraries of Shutterstock, Getty, VideoBlocks, VideoHive, and so on and so forth. We are also very much involved in content management and post-production for the likes of Discovery Channel, Smithsonian Channel, Uber, companies like GoPro, and we are very much involved in artificial intelligence, using an artificial intelligence platform at this very moment to power the first toolkit of its kind to tag 360 and virtual reality content. It is a patented process. Thank you. I'll pass that back to Marta.
No worries. Thank you so much. So we came up with some questions to prod you and get some interest and obviously you here. So there is a full house today, which is great. Some of the questions that were brought up earlier was about accuracy, about privacy, about when is this going to take my job and all that fun stuff, which is sometimes in propagated by the media and news and movies, for example. Why don't we start with, Kristen, as far as what can AI do and what does Clarify do specifically for the audience, which is DAM today?
Sure. So our technology basically understands what's in an image or a video. And so if you think of an example like a car, our general model will identify not only that it's a car, but also it might tag it with the words fast or adventure, or if it's a car driving on a highway, it might also recognize highway, which is all good and fine, but what we found with working with a lot of companies is that there are also very unique requirements. And so what we really excel at is custom training. And so we can train models to go a step beyond that and actually be able to recognize the make and manufacturer model of a car, which we've done for one of our clients. So at the base level, we automatically can pull out over 11,000 different concepts and themes for images and videos, but then we can also take it a step further and custom train something as specific as understanding the make and model of a car.
That's great. And is that humans or images that are training the AI, just so we clarify that?
Yeah, so the algorithms are what are being trained, and it's a combination. Oftentimes we can incorporate third-party data, so oftentimes there is external data that could be involved in training a model.
Brea, do you want to share any experiences that you've had with AI and things like that?
Sure, absolutely. So we've also worked with a lot of visual recognition software, none of with yours yet. We haven't had the pleasure. But we first came into it with a very, I don't want to say naive approach, but we sat through a lot of presentations, as I'm sure some of you have seen some of these things, and a lot of vendors. And we have an enormous amount of content going back 30-some years. Some of it's in great shape, some of it's not. We have not done probably our due diligence, I think this is safe to say, in preserving some of our metadata, and we could have done a better job with pretty much the input of anyone in this room. So we've had a challenge to both maximize our current content and then also going back to our library. So we explored image recognition for the video, natural language processing for the various language components, including closed caption, episode descriptions, show descriptions, and we're in a very privileged place in that a lot of our content has third-party information out in the general web. People talk about our shows, what they say about our shows really informs a lot of decisions that we get to make about them. So being able to take all of these different inputs, turn them into a training set that is usable, that's machine readable, and that also allows for the contribution of the people who know our content best, which would be either a combination of our fans, of the people at our brands, the people that are working to develop our programs at other companies, and be able to not only take what these algorithms already bring to the table, their out-of-the-box stuff, but also maximize that training component. And then, as much as possible, to be able to put all of these different algorithms in the most appropriate ways to be able to learn from each other. It's been an interesting process. So I apologize. I feel like I'm not answering your question. I'm just rambling about our history with machine learning. So yeah, that's where we are right now.
Great. Mark, do you want to give some insights on
sure.
your...
Absolutely. So we have had two recent experiences with AI. The first one involves the tagging of photography and video on behalf of many of our aforementioned clients. And so we thought we would introduce an artificial intelligence platform as a first pass on photography and on video to see what kinds of levels of keywords that we would be able to sort of save ourselves from having to do. And the experience was what I call rather lackluster. I sort of akined the entire episode to having an intern in our office, and I've said that quite a number of times. I felt like we had a high school student in our office and that it was never really that safe to allow the student to be by him or herself. And there was what I call a constant amount of oversight that was taken, that was necessary from our staff. And so having somebody constantly managing the AI as it made its way through our content or through our client's content was both taxing but rewarding. I mean, I think we learned a lot. I don't want to cast this in a negative light, but I would say that it taught us that having an AI in the office was like having a real person there. We had to sort of assume that that platform needed to be managed just like we would have any other employee, and we did it. We had to constantly be on top of things. We had to get feedback regularly from the platform, from the company that we got the platform from. And so that was an okay experience that we probably will revisit in the near future. when an appropriate platform comes and approaches us and perhaps wants to work again with us. The second episode occurred more recently with VR Meta. That's our patented toolkit to tag 360 and virtual reality content. And the VR Meta toolkit uses artificial intelligence as a first pass to interpret what is going on in a highly complex, not unlike anything else you've ever seen before, a visual environment. 360 video, virtual reality content, is not digital video, it is not photography, and so the demands on any sort of artificial intelligence platform are dramatic. The results have been less than stellar, however, we are committed to maintaining our full throttle, everything goes effort towards making towards making AI the center of the metadata generation part of the toolkit. Right now it's an AI human hybrid. We would really love to partner with somebody that would be willing to work with us to create a silo of metadata exclusively based upon 360 VR. But there are very, very few of those companies out there. Anybody out there might have a suggestion, please feel free to speak with me because we would be keen to engage. Thank you.
And quick question, was any of this curated or was it just out of the box? Like, was it trained to your point for the keywording that you experienced on the first or second case that you explained?
We have two enterprise level clients that we're presently serving with the VR Meta toolkit. But prior to that, we internally gave out, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 360 cameras to engineers in the office and forced them to go out onto the streets and video everything they could possibly get their hands on. We created a studio in the office with green screen and everything, and people were producing content on a daily basis. We developed a library internally, a small library, but a substantial one, and it continues to grow. We then allowed the artificial intelligence platform to make a pass on the content and sat there and watched what was coming back. There were some pleasant surprises. I don't want to paint doom and gloom for you and tell you that everything was completely negative. In fact, quite honestly, I can remember the first time that we all had smiles on our face when the AI was capable of returning some really incredible conceptual words, keywords, really interpretive data, which was for us a moment that told us that, heck, there is something here. One has only to spend time, as I just described to you, as an intern. Look, an intern comes in, he or she is just that, a blank piece of white paper. You could actually develop into anything. That intern could ultimately become the managing director of a company and or who knows what, if you take time and you mentor it, them, I should say. It's the same thing with AI. Spending time and having a company or having a platform that allows you then to mentor and develop that silo of metadata. It's all well and good. We're looking forward to it. You know, we're not scared of the technology. In fact, we fully embrace it.
And can you share like what the scale of human versus machine percentage is? Like
at this very moment with the VR Meta toolkit.
Sure.
I'd say it's just about 30% machine and 70% human. The 70% human, and in fact that number. There should be an asterisk next to it because the 30% of the metadata which is generated by the AI, we're forced to then what I call massage it, and so that the human interference in that workflow is primarily to take those words to build on them as opposed to oh this is garbage let's just get rid of this. Because honestly, sometimes, as I said, the conceptual keywording is actually quite good. We're just looking for a partner right now who is fully engaged in developing a silo of metadata for virtual reality and for 360 content. And I think that'll probably be a better match for us.
Great. So let's go back to Kristen for a second and talk about accuracy and implicit biases for tagging. Can you, I'd like all of your perspectives on this, but please.
Yeah, I know it's a very hot topic, I guess, these days. And I guess one really critical distinction to make is that algorithms are not biased. However, the data sets that you train them with can be biased. And so we recently released a model around demographics, and there's a great blog post on our website that actually talks about the very specific steps we took to make sure that we weren't using biased data to train this demographic model. And so I think that, you know, there's a blurry line that gets reported about that really blames it on the technology itself when it's not the algorithms that are biased, but rather the data sets that you might use to train them.
Because it's the humans that are generating those data sets, to your point?
Correct.
Yeah, so we all have our own biases, whether we realize it or not.
Well, the humans are always the start of this thing.
Right. I mean,
they're the ones who create, I'm assuming, the model and it goes from there.
Yep.
Sorry.
Okay.
I do have a follow-up question at that one point, but
you want to go?
Yeah. Before you kind of guys, hi, I'm Carol, by the way. Hello. one of the co-organizers. When it comes just to that, the idea of the human creating the model, etc. With a lot of the auto tagging, with a lot of the AI that you're using, is it mostly being used for tagging of assets, or is that AI being used to create metadata, which is then used to determine, you know, popularity of something, whether or not something's successful, how much someone's watching it, whether or not something may end up being canceled or continue or anything like that? Is the metadata being used for that and kind of being crunched through analytics, or is it really mostly at this point AI and tagging specifically?
You can feel free to pass it if you.
I can give one answer, maybe. So there's a couple of use cases. One is obviously searching, right? So to be able to find something, the metadata is used very extensively for that. I'd say one use case that we often help companies with is around moderation. So the idea of weeding out something that might be inappropriate or not safe for work. So we have models that actually can eliminate those types of results from a data set. So sometimes the data is used for that purpose.
We have a lot of different use cases, and the platform that we're developing now is meant to be use case agnostic because we have both internal customers, obviously users, who are using it to inform their analytics and to be able to inform even things out of like targeting for advertisers and things of that nature. And definitely to measure public sentiment and reaction to whether or not the new season of CSDK is landing or whatever. But then we also have internal users that are programming, editorial people, et cetera. We plan at some point in the future to have curated themes and topics and tones that are externally facing. But we expect that, you know, the results for that will be something that's more manicured and curated as opposed to the raw tagging and data from the other, for the other customers.
I just wanted to add lastly that when it comes time to keywording traditional stock photography and or content from any corporation, for internal or external licensing or use, I should say, it's purely just for keywording. There's no metric leveraging at all at that stage. It's just purely just to keyword what is within the image or within the motion asset. On the VR Meta Toolkit, it is both tagging for identification as well as for leveraging of metrics. Mm-hmm. The metric data is invaluable because we're dealing with so much information within any immersive content. It's at least 5 to 6 times more than you would ever get from any traditional media type. And so the metric data is invaluable.
So let's talk about applications of AI in relation to DAM. What's not there yet? If any of you want to take that. Okay.
All right.
Two of you want to
start. We have had some very interesting results on some of our stuff. A lot of times when people come in, they'll give us their media experience, which is usually tied to the news. So they always demo with the Daily Show. like every single time, set a watch to it. And the data shows great program, but it's a very small part of our catalog. The majority of it is more narrative. It is less, you know, it's reality, so people are mumbling, or it's animated, so it's for three-year-olds. So their usual success rates are going to be very different. So we did a deep dive with a fairly large provider of this stuff, and we tested extensively on one of our shows, and we made them test on Teen Wolf, which, if you're not familiar, is a show about teenage werewolves. And the engineering staff was a little upset because we were training visual recognition algorithms on abs. But that's very important for our content pool. And they kept being like, can we just do Breaking Bad?
That is
no.
A great
job. So it did end up, you know, like I said, we got some great stuff. We really did. I agree that there's definitely some major promise. We also got some very strange things. When training on our character sets, we, say for example, we had one character, secondary character, and we did a positive negative training set where we have a bunch of images of the character and a bunch of images of other characters. And it returned 418 results for, I think at that time it was 5 seasons of the show. We were like, that's great, that's about what we expected. And then we sat down and we actually looked at the results, and 8 of them were accurate. So not great, but there are a lot of characters that look like that guy. Like a human who's not familiar with the show, an adult, would probably be like, they all look the same, I don't understand. So that was a challenge. And then we also ran into things like every time there was a party, this algorithm returned wedding. And it was a little prudish. These were like dance club scenes, it was very intense. And then we were able to really unpack those results a little bit more and see, okay, it sees people, it sees dancing, it does see nightclub components. It's just mislabeling them. And that's where we found that exposing the taxonomy that underlies these results and building a custom model that really fits our domain was the way to go going forward.
So you were training the AI based on your taxonomy?
We are then creating a taxonomy to be able to use going forward.
Okay, so it's creating a taxonomy for you.
Well, no, we are making it machine readable so that we can use it going forward.
Was it a custom translate table?
Pardon?
Was it really just a custom translate table?
I don't know. I'm sorry, that's not my discipline.
It's okay.
But again, you needed a person.
We need people, we need subject matter experts, we need people that know how to organize these things. We've got some wonderful folks working on this right now. And you know, without them, without them, the machine learning would be fairly useless. So that's where we're at right now.
Anything else?
Yeah, I would say most of the DAM implementations that we power use our kind of standard general model, just kind of backing up exactly what Bree was talking about. So I think there's a huge opportunity to take it a step further. Whether it's for a specific client, where in which case we do that for one of the social marketing platforms where they sort of have a special model that is only used on their content that is powered through the application. I don't think we've really gone that far with any of the pure DAM implementations, but it's certainly something that's possible and obviously could be far more useful depending on the content.
So basically having human curators or more of them to train it and help it and move it along to Bray's point?
Yeah, to train a specific model for perhaps a particular set of content or a particular customer or need or requirement.
Help me understand, what does the data sets that come out of the tool look like?
So pretty simple for us, it's a JSON file.
Okay.
We can JSON. A lot of people have various visualizations that base off of that, but we also want that JSON file.
Likewise, as well as Excel and CSV files. So all three flavors.
Great. Awesome. And then since we already talked about human curation, and let's tackle the how. When will it take our jobs away, or when will it change our jobs? Question. Because we already talked about the fact that we need human curation more and more, and it sounds like a future job for us. Hint, hint. But it sounds like the tool will need more of that. Is that the future, or in your opinions, or is there something else as far as?
Well, I think that you know, we've all been using different flavors of AI, whether you use Siri on your iPhone. So, this technology has crept into our daily lives, whether we've noticed it, you know, dramatically or just gradually. But what I would say is that the proliferation of visual content is not going down. There's a trillion images created every year. I think it's 300 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every minute, and that number just keeps going up. So I think there's still a huge opportunity to provide, optimizing and complementing a human workforce and just making it more efficient in doing some of the, you know, the underlying tagging that then maybe perhaps still needs a human touch, or training custom models, et cetera. So
I was more concerned before I started working with these things. I think that it's kind of like a computer, in that, I mean, obviously it is a computer, but that has changed the way we do our work, and it's changed, obviously, a lot how the dynamics of certain jobs. But the jobs themselves continue to be, and I think that what this will hopefully do is eliminate probably the most tedious parts of our jobs, and will theoretically allow us to be a little bit more creative with our time. I think that any sort of solution that, at least on my level, makes it so that creative people have to spend less time with the types of tasks that we're hoping to have machine learning do is a really great thing. How that is actually implemented is something that certainly a lot of tech people are talking about, and I think it would be, I think it's an ongoing important conversation for people who are not in tech to contribute to as well, because, need a lot of variety of voices. So, but yeah, I would not be terribly concerned about people losing jobs at this point. I mean, they're so far, obviously it's all expanding very rapidly. This could all be vastly different next week, but so far it seems very much like a little Roomba that gets stuck in the corner and needs a bunch of humans. Put it on its way.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
Oh.
But the Roomba's not going to get out of the corner. In fact, you were all made redundant about a half an hour ago. actually, that did not happen, and that will not happen. In fact, I don't see that happening. Like the other two panelists have also agreed that it's not going to happen anytime soon. And I really do believe that the need for human mentoring of the AI. And whatever format it might reside within the workflow, and wherever it might reside, is going to not decrease, but actually increase. There will always have to be sort of a human being involved in quality control, in management, in education, improving, doing things that we are meant to do, which is to manage and to oversight and to oversee. And so, our brains are hopefully wired slightly different than a piece of code and an algorithm, and we have the capacity to, as I said, to act as managers. And so I don't foresee this changing anytime soon. And I also would like to also add, just to sort of assuage any additional worries, that as much as AI has creeped into literally almost everything that we do right now, whether, as it was described, Siri or Echo or any other kind of a platform which interprets our daily wishes and then proceeds to deliver our food and to do whatever else we might need to have done within the house. I don't foresee the kind of HAL in 2001: A Space Odyssey scenario for ever occurring. That's one. Two, I don't foresee a moment where AI takes or resides within the workflow with the kind of certainty and capacity to do things semi-independently for quite a long time. At minimum, we might be talking 4 to 5 years before you start seeing some semblance of that, but it might be further on beyond that. This is just really, really, it's really, really, really difficult to replicate us. What's just between this year and this year is just almost near impossible to replicate, thank goodness. So that's it.
Yeah, I would just maybe also add that there's a lot of good things that come out of the technology as well, and things that wouldn't be able to be accomplished without it. So one example is we work with a company out of France called Inside that basically it has trained a model. It's a medical company that specializes in ear disease. And it's trained a model that allows doctors to go out into remote regions that don't have connectivity and don't have access to medical care in Africa and South America, and basically take pictures of people's ears, and on the phone, the model will diagnose whether or not there's a disease. And it has over a 99% accuracy. So it's pretty remarkable, and they're able to, you know, accomplish something that they just wouldn't be possible without the technology. So there are many, many opportunities like that still to be discovered and to be deployed.
Awesome. Let's talk, so we talked a lot about AI. Let's talk a little about automation, since some of you have some experience with that, with or without AI. Let's talk about that. What are you seeing with DAM and automation?
Yeah, I imagine it's different for different implementations. I mean, what we've seen directly has been like a 10x factor of efficiency when there's a large volume of content that needs to be tagged and analyzed. So I don't know, you know, I would maybe ask the DAM vendors specifically if they have stats that are, you know, relative to the different types of content that existed within their backend, but those are some metrics that we've seen with customers. So,
and one, can you share like how fast the AI can tag a handful of images, 10,000 images or 1,000 images?
I mean, it's within like each image is under a second. So if you can actually try it out on our website, you can just drop an image in and or a video, and you know it will come back with the tags pretty much right away. And we just released a mobile SDK, so now you don't even need to be connected to the network. You can actually do it. I'm an Android user. So it's available first on iPhone, but you know, literally I could scan the room and it would chair light like automatically right as I was doing it. So
literally a second per image you could tag, and I assume there's an API to many of these tools. So
it is an API. That's right. Exactly what it is. Yeah.
And then you can tie it to effectively any DAM system.
It's meant, yeah, exactly to integrate with. Enterprise applications, or it's implemented in many, many different ways, but yeah.
Should we talk more about other automations that you've seen?
Sure. For us, the challenge to automation is our existing legacy systems, in that obviously enterprise-wide, a lot of things have been done at various times, so I'm sure we're great decisions then. So getting everything... It's been kind of a problem. But we are very excited about certainly the possibility of, yes, returning image results and things of that nature. When we were doing every 5 seconds, we were taking as much information from our videos as we possibly could. And it was returning almost in real time. It was really remarkable. But we're also very interested in things like when we send out feeds, being able to automate quality control, being able to automate just even, you know, I think this sounds so dramatic, but piracy attempts are something that obviously media companies are very interested in. And certainly with all of our international channels, being able to automate as much of that process as possible for moving content.
Well, we are very much wedded to our clients' wishes. And so when it comes to batch processing and or automated processing, we are solely subservient to their needs and the way that they might want their content processed. We can suggest, and we have suggested on numerous occasions, automated processes. Sometimes they are agreed to. Most times they're not, just because this is not the way we would want it to be done. And so we are pretty much, you know, a piece of putty in the hands of at least our workflows and the way that we attack and or the way we approach or process any of our clients' content is all solely based upon their wishes. And so it's a variety of responses. So Sometimes yes, most times not.
So we're going to open up to audience questions, if you have any. I'm going to pass the mic around. One second. Hold on for the mic so we can all hear it kindly.
I've heard you say that, you know, there's, in your experience, it's kind of been a little bit of like 30% machine, 70% human. It's like kind of like an intern. When does a company think it's feasible? Like, how much content do they have to make this worthwhile? Is there a sense of that?
Mm-hmm.
How much stuff do you need to have to make it worthwhile to invest in this? Because it's not like it's going to work 100%. We know that. That's a given. So can you give us a sense of that?
Sure. Well, look, have this question been, have the technology existed and have this question been asked in the beginning of the digital era, I probably would have told you in the tens of thousands of assets. Now I'm going to tell you that, given all the numbers that you get bantered around and you yourself are probably intimately involved with, that it's now in the millions. I mean, you're going to have to run a lot of images, a lot of motion content, a lot of whatever content you want to run through your neural network, your deep learning platform, your AI, in order to get it up to speed. Building data silos of size or heft in order to then be able to return with accuracy the kinds of metadata that you're expecting it to return to you is going to demands vast volumes. I don't know that any one company could provide enough content wholly owned, because many times companies are dealing with third-party content, wholly owned content. And I defer now over to the expert here in terms of the development of any one software. Because I'm curious myself. I've heard numbers given to us by platforms like yourselves, but I'm guessing that the numbers must be in the low to mid tens of millions. Am I correct?
It depends what you're looking to do. I mean, you can train a model on as little as one image, but models get better with more content. We normally, so I guess there's a pretty big distinction with different AI technologies. We're a SaaS platform, and so we basically are continuously improving by the more data and the more content that we get into our back-end general models. So
it's aggregated.
It's aggregated, exactly. So it continues to learn and get smarter as the back end grows, if you will. But typically what we tell customers, if they want to custom train something, that 1,000 images is really the ideal, minimum that we would use. But like I said, you can literally train it, and if I had an iPhone, I could show you. I have trained it, on a tea bag or whatever, like just from one single image. So it just gets more accurate with more.
Sorry, I have a question. Yeah. 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 Because there's no, and I don't know who the question is going to go there. So.
Thank you so much. It's been really interesting. There's so many different. There's a bunch of different algorithms, right? There's different methodologies you can use, but for healthcare, it might be one thing because you have somebody who's like sick and they have a fever, so you have certain parameters. But for images, it's so different. Is there a certain algorithm that is effective, or is there one way of doing this that is more useful than others?
Do you want to pick it? Well, sure. Obviously, I can't speak to the intimate knowledge of algorithms that an actual provider would be able to, but we found that various components, like you said, some things are better than others, and it really, there's no one that's better, though, for us. Obviously, like, there's a provider that does a little bit better with celebrity faces, which is important to us, but because they happen to have a longer history in training on celebrity images, There's someone that does a little bit better with understanding sentiment in words, someone that does better with speech to text. That being said, we've also found that the variations are less important to us right now as being able to integrate best with that particular system, in that someone doing speech to text, if it's 1% better than someone else, it's not provided a meaningful difference to us yet. But certainly, I actually would say image recognition is the place in which we've seen the most variance.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to add to that, it also depends if you're custom training something on the data set that goes with it. The technology for images itself, I mean, there are different layers that, you know, everybody has different algorithms that kind of power their back end. Ours won a award back in 2013 because of the way it was built. I'm not technical enough to explain exactly what the difference is in that, but if, you know, the data set definitely makes a very big difference in terms of the accuracy for a specific set of content.
Just to add to that, ImageNet is the gold standard. You can look up ImageNet for image recognition. It's the gold standard done by, I think it was Stanford, and I think that's the prize that a few have won, including your co-founder, or your founder, should I say, and CEO. And then to your point about one algorithm, I've been tracking about 130 of them that do image recognition, and tracking this for about 2 years. Half of them no longer exist because they were bought up by large companies that we all know of very well. And so there's 130 algorithms that just do image recognition or various aspects of image recognition, like nudity or facial or whatever. What a lot of these companies doing is they're combining APIs so that you can do facial and nudity like Facebook does and others. So you can have the best of all worlds. So it's not one algorithm doing everything known to mankind. And then there's also 40-some algorithms that just do video recognition. And you can combine that, hypothetically speaking. So there's multiple algorithms that do multiple different things. But they're all narrow AI, meaning they're narrow focus on doing specific tasks. There is no general AI. There is no super AI like Terminator or anything like that. We're far from that. Likely decades, realistically speaking, but we're getting warmer as we combine a bunch of narrow eyes to do more things for us and take away tasks like, quick poll, how many love doing tagging all day long? Oh, no hands. Surprising. I wonder why image recognition is really popular right now. This is why. So it's going to take away tasks that we don't want to be doing. So we have time to do other tasks that we do want to be doing and manage things like that. Does that answer the question? Sorry.
Yeah. No, that was exactly right.
That's it. Yep. Next question. For me? Mike's coming around.
Do you
want to
borrow this one?
Sure.
It's coming.
My question has very much to do with the ROI. And is it more of a question, and this might be for you more than anyone, is the motivation for buying the software saving repetitive tasks that they're already doing, or opening up the opportunity for content that no one would ever touch because it's just too painful, expensive, or hard? Where do you find the bigger motivation for buying?
Oh, sorry. Sure. So there's definitely ROI around optimizing and efficiency. I think some examples, and I didn't talk about this before, but I know we work with Staples over in Europe, and they were able to get to market and launch in 12 markets. We have the ability, once something is tagged, to support translating it into 12 languages. And so they were able to use that feature and quickly launch websites across, I think, 15 different countries in Europe. And they saved a tremendous amount of money because they had an ad agency that was manually kind of helping them and would have kind of helped them launch market by market. So there are many kind of different use cases like that where there's savings to be had. I think the second part of your question was around how do you make incremental money off of content that you didn't know you had. And I think that's really the next phase of where the possibilities are with personalization. So once you're able to start marrying not only information about the image, but also external information to present something back that's either that's very personalized, then I think there are going to be many, many opportunities to do as you suggest. I haven't seen quite as many use cases of that yet, more on the cost-saving side.
Actually, when we were going through the budget process for creating this platform, we had to do saving revenue and generating as well. And so, like you said, obviously, being able to save isn't deeply important, but in terms of generating, we found that all of our systems are based on a linear world where we have insight into an episode, with a few exceptions, but for the most part, insight into an episode as a whole. And so being able to get further insight into what is actually happening in between actual scenes allows us to use the only real product that we have, which is entertainment shows, and slice them and license them in new ways.
Thanks. So I'm very interested in how you're tagging video, and particularly 360 assets. And I guess the question I have is, what questions do you want to answer when you get this data back? Because as you said, there's like 5-10 times more information from linear assets. You can find visual information, you can find time-based information when things happen. What's something someone might be looking for?
Right, it's a very good question, because this is all in real time. All of the developments that are being made are all happening in real time. There's very little history to tagging 360 and VR content. It has not been with us that long. And so at this very stage, I can tell you that all events, all objects, all people are in play. And that what that means is that we're quite literally, by default, tagging everything, including all four channels of audio. Unlike traditional digital video, which is two channel, 360 video and virtual reality immersive content is four channel, and it brings in an incredible host of possibilities, as well as technical hurdles to be overcome. You have to sort of imagine, and I think all of you would probably have, at one time or another, that 360 video or being within an immersive environment is just that. If we think about traditional video, it is a 16:9 frame, and whatever occurs within that 16:9 frame, everything is all known to us. What occurs above, below, to the right or to the left of the camera is unknown to us. Thus, that is not the case within a piece of immersive content. Immersive content, by its nature, allows us to experience and to know all events, whether they're audible or visual. And so the toolkit had to overcome an unbelievable amount of hurdles in order to then digest all of the amounts of data that you can imagine. I mean, just think about this room right now. There are things that are going on behind me, below me, above me, in front of me. People are making noises. There are movements if I move my chair like that. The data set that is returned to any one of our clients could identify the fact that that noise and tell that person who, if they wanted to know, that occurred at, I don't know, 15 degrees south, 10 degrees north, whatever the X, Y axis was. And if the camera had GPS, it would tell the recipient of that data exactly where I was on Earth when that noise was made, how long that noise was made for, which frame it sat within. And so then those metrics are intoxicating in their volume and the potential for revenue return. And so the challenges are, well, like trying to climb Mount Everest in ice skates. I can't say it in lesser terms, but we're meeting those challenges. AI, as I described earlier, is core to that. Without artificial intelligence, this could never have been mastered. We're attempting to overcome some issues at this very moment, which are now being processed by real people. But the ultimate plan is to do it exclusively with artificial intelligence. Please.
Next question.
My question is for Bria. You were talking a little bit about budgeting.
Yes.
And we're also talking about where our jobs may go. So is your primary investment in future on the vendor side of AI or the services surrounding AI, such as data science or interpretation, creative interpretation of frames and video, et cetera?
Great question. So for the future, okay, so caveat this with this is our experience in this one enterprise. We happen to have a fairly robust data science department. We do not have much experience in interpreting and training machine learning. So for us, that's where I think our gap is. In terms of vendor budgets, we're doing a mix of both vendors and of maximizing open source solutions. So obviously that's an engineering resource build as well. And overall engineering architects to be able to make sure that all these various components speak to each other. Enterprise-wide solution so far has not been the right thing for us. It's fine. Certainly because we do have such a wealth of resources of creative talent, we've been we're focusing a lot on outreach for that to speak to our brands and to speak to those partners so that they can help us as we continue to train these things and interpret them. But yeah, I think that going forward that's going to be a gap for us.
And
taxonomists, yes, definitely taxonomists. the thing that's so interesting too is as you're marrying these vendors together, the results and trying to get something meaningful, the taxonomy layer is something that they, some of them have certainly addressed, but all of them that we've spoken with so far have mentioned that they're not where they want to be with that. So, there's a tip. No, it's interesting.
I guess this might be a little bit technical or this might be very, very quick. Where do you contain and organize the keywords, the domain keywords that your AI uses or that your experts put into the system? Do you use ontologies or is there a repository like semantic in anywhere? Is there any of the keywords refer to a context?
I can
start it.
Please,
So we actually have a data strategy team that that does this function, and they use a variety of different tools to build data sets. They also do things like if somebody has an existing data set, they're experts in being able to clean it up. As we always like to say, everybody wants to work on an AI project, but nobody wants to do the sort of very unsexy part of it, which is cleaning up the data. And so one of the biggest value adds that we can bring to organizations is leveraging the expertise of this team who, I could have you follow up offline as to specifically what they do, but like I said, they use a number of third-party tools as well as their own expertise in being able to read, model, and understand the way a data set should be structured.
Yes. So also our experience in that. No, that's great. I'm delighted that you have that team. I think that's wonderful. You guys are, that's phenomenal. Because a lot of the people that we work with do not do that type of stewardship.
Right.
So for us, again, this is based on Viacom-specific structure. So,
excuse me.
We have a lot of different inputs in various forms, and we have a lot of resistance to overhauling a metadata structure that is working in some ways for some people. So with all that being, and we're also, as we're building this out, trying to figure out what use cases we need to solve for immediately and what are going to be in the future, our understanding of how we need to build our data structure is changing. We are working towards a knowledge graph, and we are working right now with some various third-party software, which is allowing us to build taxonomies that are specific to the domain and that are specific to how the end output will be used. So being able to merge, you know, obviously our user analytics with the increased metadata about our shows. Yeah, so to be continued for us. But yeah, ontologies.
Other questions?
I have a question.
Well, what you were saying, so do the taxonomies come in before or after the, so the AI just does the thing, but then the taxonomies help you make sense of the data you get back?
For us, we started without a taxonomy component. We just turned our data over and saw what we got back. And what our end goal, so we realized we were told fairly quickly that, you know, AI can understand scenes. That's a big deal for us. And while certainly, you know, image recognition is amazing, shot detection is incredible, natural language processing, speech detects, all these things, all the components that make a scene, we weren't really seeing a vendor that could combine all those things so we could reasonably say, yes, this is a solid interpretation of a scene. So when we were looking to solve that problem, one of the roadblocks that we kept hitting is that the underlying taxonomy that was contextualizing the results was not, the various algorithms were not drawing from the same source set. So our taxonomy work started from there, and it's gone on to inform a lot of our decisions, but it's internally generated. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so it's like you get the data and then you learn more, so you refine it and then create more of a taxonomy, and then you go back and you do.
Yeah, then we, so if we're not getting the results that we want, then we look as to whether or not it's the training set, the taxonomy, contextualizing it wrong. Yeah,
so it's an iterative process.
Absolutely, very iterative for us.
Thank you.
I think we have time for one more quick question.
Yeah, hi. This, I think, is a question probably for Mark and Kristen probably most. To what extent might you think that the AI is training the human? And what I mean by that is, Mark, you said that it was like a 30-70 split, where you had 30% AI and you had 70% people actually doing it. But I guess the question that crossed through my mind at that point was, if what is the effect of that 30% when it's, if the data gets, say, similar content gets tagged similarly, but not exactly, precisely, or accurately, at what point does it suggest to your human analyst that this is actually maybe the right information? And then maybe...
And then it turns into a circle.
Yeah,
it turns into a
propagating
cycle.
Bad... learning back into the system. And I guess that'd be a question for you because you're really one of the technical side.
May I? Thanks. Well, that happened actually early on, and that was a pleasant surprise for us. And I think I inferred that in the beginning of this of the conference. And that was that it returned to us some conceptual words in the very beginning during a testing phase or early phase that actually were very, very accurate. And we thought, wow, we didn't even think of that. And so yes, the answer is that yes, indeed, we were being taught by this deep learning platform, and we then incorporated those terms into the taxonomy. And when similar content appeared in front of the editors, they then replicated those terms across the board because they felt that they actually did fit quite well. You know, use this term, I'll use it 100,000 times, the intern in the office. I said that interns demand mentoring and management, but it doesn't mean that an intern is, you know, completely worthless. Indeed, an intern can actually become a strong or an intelligent voice. Using a farcical example of Robert De Niro in this, of course, in the film The Intern, but that's perhaps, you know, not actually outside of the reality, and that is that, you know, there are moments, and there have been moments in this many month arc of co-learning when the platform has provided us with results that we've all, you know, thought, wow, this is exactly what we wanted. We've had other times when my favorite one, and I think everybody's favorite one, revolves around footage of the hotel in Dubai, the Burj Dubai. It's a very iconic, architecturally unique hotel. It looks like a giant sail. It's a 60 or 70 story hotel, and I think you're probably all familiar with it. It sits on an isthmus jutting out into the Gulf. And there was this helicopter footage of the Burj, and the helicopter was revolving around. And the return from the artificial intelligence was rocket ship. and we all stopped in our tracks. And of course, it provided untold hours of laughter and commentary. In fact, it resonated so well that I'm regurgitating the story many months later. And so there are those moments where you just go, oh my gosh, but there have been quite a few really great moments of pleasure that have, as I've just described, provided the editors with words and suggestions that have actually been very positive. So how much in terms of percentage, I don't think I can give you an answer to that. What I can tell you is we're looking for that to increase. We want to see more of it. I don't want to sit here and just make you think that, you know, all we do is just sort of laugh it off. We're not investing all this amount of time, not investing all the amount of effort in terms of human resources to manage this, to do all of the things, because it is a teaching process. And so, you know, as I've described it, it is core to our company's future. We're fully engaged, and we're going to continue with it as long as we possibly need to, or have to, I should say.
Last thoughts, please.
And I think you covered it. I would just add that it's very common, the concept of what I'll call tuning or retraining, to sort of constantly be doing a quality check as part of the process. So, you know, the goal there would be to prohibit something like what you described from happening. But, you know, part of the best practice that we recommend and encourage is that we are doing this retraining and checking and tuning for that very reason.
Any parting thoughts from each panelist?
I just have been curious since we started. A show of hands as to how many people in the audience are actually using AI or experimenting or have it in production today.
About five hands.
I don't know, it's been very gratifying for me in experimenting with these things and seeing that obviously machines will continue to grow and change, but the ways in which humans understand content and nuance still is in high demand. So
I'm going to ditto that and say that your jobs are all safe. Any of us here in the office, any of us here will end up being put out of a job by artificial intelligence. The volume of content that's being generated, the new forms of content that are being generated. One didn't know about 360 or VR 2-3 years ago. Who knows what's going to come down the pike anytime soon? And so there will always be a necessity to have humans be the first set of eyes and brain cells on any content before certain processes might or might not ever be turned over to a artificial intelligence platform for the process.
Okay. Let's get a round of applause for the speakers. A couple of parting thoughts. If there's interest in this, just go to Amazon and type in keywording, and you'll find a lot more about this. And then one last thing is, how many people are looking for a job in DAM? Raise your hands and just take a look real quick. And how many are looking to fill a job in DAM?
Possibly.
Are there one hand? Okay.
Possibly.
Two hands? Okay.
I know.
Yeah. Can you raise your hand one more time so we can actually see them? There you go. Okay. All right. So feel free to connect afterwards. Thank you so much, and we'll see you at the next NYC Dam. Thanks again.
Thank you, guys.